Hey everyone, welcome to today's show. We've got a great one for you. We are talking about social media in the post-AI world. Social media is getting underrated right now, and we're going to tell you why. I'm here with a very special guest host, Yulia Bell, who is the co-founder of Notice, is filling in for Kieran today, and we're diving into all things social media. She's got some great lessons, some great learnings, how to go viral on Twitter. So much jam-packed in today's show. Let's get into it. There is no secret formula for scaling customer support and boosting customer satisfaction. But there is the all-new HubSpot Service Hub, bringing service and support together in one platform so you can deliver the best experiences possible and free up a rep's time with AI-powered help desk, all so you can keep customers happy. Secrets out. Service Hub is a game changer. Visit HubSpot.com/service to learn more. Yulia, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. This is going to be so much fun.
You're now also officially a friend of the pod because you've been on the show multiple times. And once you're on the show multiple times, you're a friend of the show, friend of the pod. And you're doing us a special favor of guest hosting with me while Kieran is on his parental leave. He's hanging out with Baby Hope. And we're going to get to talk AI and social today, which is something I think you and I could probably talk for a couple hours on. So I'm pumped.
Yeah, it's going to be a really long episode, guys. Strap in for a 5-hour discussion on social and AI.
Yulia's like, settle in, everybody. We got a lot to say.
Buckle up. It's going to be long.
You're going to get our classic kind of 40-minute show today, but it's going to be packed full of some fun, some insights. Yulia and I are always going kind of back and forth on Twitter, on email, what have you. So, Yulia, to get started, one of the things that I've kind of observed is that the AI hype train is obviously fully out of the train station, going fast, everybody's caring about it. And with that, social media and the social web has kind of not gotten forgotten, but it's taken a back seat to that AI conversation. And I think that's a big mistake because I think the AI era makes social media way more important, not way less important. And I'd love to kind of hear from you. What are you seeing in the world of social these days?
Yeah, well, I think it's actually the opposite, where social media is the thing. And especially taking data from social, obviously AI has enabled us to go in and take very large data sets to be able to glean insights and take actions, particularly around, you know, driving decisions, driving strategy for companies. And that's kind of what we're seeing happening. And I think there's going to be so much more of this. I think it's a very common phrase at this point to say that data is gold. But I think this is really going to be the moat, the proprietary moat of companies who are able to acquire these unique data structures and enrichment layers and embed them within their teams. And I think to make this, because I felt like it was sounded very like Deloitte and corporate, but I think, you know, from like a
you
real...
You used to be a consultant at some point, right?
At Bridgewater. Yeah, yeah. So...
Oh, you were Bridgewater. Yeah, you weren't Deloitte. She's like, I am not Deloitte. Do not confuse me with that. But I was Bridgewater.
But I think for teams, both early stage teams, scaling teams, as well as just, you know, these giant enterprises, for them, it's a different type of usage. But happy to kind of go into all three of them and break it down, you know, from a practical standpoint and almost have like a playbook of what we're seeing of how teams are using this and why it's becoming more and more important.
Yeah, I would love that. And as a lead into that, what I'd also like to remind people in this AI era is that as kind of a validation point for what you're saying, we're seeing a lot of licensing deals with social companies and these large language models. I think most famously, Reddit signed a pretty major deal to license its data. OpenAI has multiple agreements in place with both social and traditional media companies. So we don't talk about that stuff that much, but the data and the real-time nature of social is just getting kind of baked into all of the kind of large-scale consumer LLMs,
yeah,
which is a really, really big deal. And I want to underscore that for everyone, that that is one of the going to be the core roles of social, and that your sentiment, your voice, your engagement on social is going to directly translate to how you show up in a large language model.
Exactly. Because I think here's the bottom line, where AI models by themselves don't mean all that much without the data, right? Like, it's kind of the counterparts. And I think, again, correct, in the age of how we think about personalization, because I think that everything that we've seen about AI, this monumental innovations that we're seeing in real time, there's still a lot of, you know, personalized elements that can be improved. And I think that's a really big focus for a lot of these AI companies of how do we go from general automated agents to, yes, there's automation, but it needs to sound, right now there's a lot of automation with a human in the loop, but how do we also make it so that it sounds even more personal and does more of the work for it? And I think just a longstanding design principle and a product principle for ourselves within the Notice team is, how do we make that tech and software so intelligent that it no longer kind of cracks the numbers, connects the dots, analyzes, and then shows you a bunch of data and dashboards, but it's how do we make it so seamless that I think AI, and this is where AI is going, it's you no longer have to kind of touch and prod it and configure it. It comes pre-configured for you. It understands who you are, who your business is, what your voice is, and what is ultimately more important. And I think all of that goes back to the level of data that you have. And I think, again, that's the thing that's going to leapfrog other companies that have the data against the companies that don't.
Yeah, well, I think that's a really great point there, which social media and the data from social is really going to help fix AI's blank page problem.
Exactly.
I think one of the core challenges with AI tools out there, I was just at South by Southwest. I talked to a whole host of companies, some of the biggest consumer brands that you've ever heard of, to some early stage startups. And there were a couple of themes that came out of those conversations. I'm interested to hear your take on these, Julia. The first was, people want to do stuff with AI, but they don't know what use case to do, and they don't know how to get something like working in production, like that's actually live and out there. They're like, yeah, you know, we want a bot for our customers and our prospects, but like we've tried a few and we just can't get one live that we think's good enough and like don't know how to set it up. And those are kind of the core common objections that you hear. The other is like, I don't know where to start. It's that blank page problem. It's like, oh gosh, I know I'm supposed to be doing AI, but my investors are yelling at me. My employees are unhappy. All of these things are happening. How do I actually just get started and start iterating on something? Because on the past shows we've done, there's a couple episodes I did with Emmy Jonathan from HubSpot. One of the things we talk about is the value is getting something live and iterating and learning with your audience, with your customers. And if you can't get something live, then you're just like, you don't get that data and you don't get that feedback loop. Mm-hmm. And I think what I hear you saying is like, we're going to use all of what we know from both brand and personal accounts on social, but also broader consumer sentiment on social to actually fix that kind of blank page AI problem.
Exactly. That's exactly it. Because I think the two problem areas that we're seeing right now within consumer and B2B can be fixed and will be fixed by having more intelligence on users. And I think it goes back, there's kind of an interesting shift where, you know, with HubSpot, what HubSpot does amazing at is showing you, hey, you know, kind of being the source of truth and then being able to store the who, right? So who are the people mm-hmm. that we're reaching out to? And now I think where consumers are expecting this level of experience, and I think where the companies are like not there yet, is understanding the when and the how. And I think this is where the data comes in, because the when is measuring that real-time intent. So yes, you may have, you know, the exact perfect list of people who you're going out to. A lot of teams, you know, both early stage and late stage are doing a lot of outbounds, obviously relying on ads. The organic social is a big part of this as well, kind of the mix of how they reach their audiences. But at the same time, a lot of the things that we're seeing, and I think a lot of kind of the noise that we're seeing in our inboxes or our DMs, are people just being like, hey, we know the who, we're just going to blast out some messages and then do some follow-ups. I'm even getting DMs that are, you know, people are saying, hey, like, here's the offer that I'm giving you. If you don't answer, I'm just going to keep following up. And I was like, that is a terrible thing to do.
That makes me want to cry. Like, actually makes me feel dead inside.
Please don't. Do not follow up.
Please.
Like, there's no interpersonal kind of personalization. And there's also no intent. Like, I've never talked about wanting, you know, kind of the service that they're offering. I'm not going to throw them under the bus more. But here's the thing. Understanding that intent, especially in real time, and having that knowledge of saying, well, do we know if they need this service right now? Is this an actual pain point that they're trying to solve? Mm-hmm. Are they showing us, you know, through their interactions, their contents, through, you know, kind of the things that they're posting, engaging on, is this enough to give us a good predictability of intent that we can go and act upon or follow up upon in our sequencing? And then how do we then personalize this both in the outbound, in the follow-up message, in the actual call, to, you know, because it's so important. I think anyone who's ever sold anything or been in sales, they understand the importance of not only, again, that personalization of having done this research. Everyone wants to feel special. Everyone wants to know that, hey, like people have thought about this call before the call, but also even using the language of what they're saying, right? Like kind of referencing back to the pain points in the language that the soon-to-be customer has referenced. That is just really key for conversion. And I think especially, you know, I've been talking about the economy and the macroeconomic factors here, getting to conversion and closing the loop faster and closing the deal faster is so, so, so important. So I think this is, again, the teams that are catching on to this and the companies that are offering this level of intelligence and insight are the ones that are going to be the ones who essentially kind of dominate the market, because that's what the users are expecting. And that's where we're seeing results as well.
So for everybody listening or watching, I think you brought up some really good points, Julia, and I want to frame them up for everybody, because if you are not deep in the world of marketing or sales, or maybe you're in the brand or social world, but you're not in the demand gen world, one of the things in the demand gen world, which is where I come from, what we talk about a lot is both intent of your prospects and the fit of your prospects, right? And the fit basically means, are they in your target market? Are they a type of company you sell to? Are they in the role that you normally sell to? Can they make the decision to sign off and buy your product? And then, Julia, what you were just talking about is intent, which you can use social signals to essentially understand, oh, somebody's actively shopping for the thing that I make right now. And it's really critical that I engage with them in a meaningful way right now. And so what normally happens is if you have a big outbound sales motion, you're obsessed with fit. Right? You're like, oh, I'm going to get my best fit companies. And those best fit companies are great. And you know what? They are going to pay you the most money, right? Because they're your perfect customer. The average contract value on those are going to be the highest, but it's going to be a slog, right? You're going to be grinding against the list of calls you're trying to make, emails you're making, because a lot of them aren't going to be shopping now. Some are going to be using your competitor. You're going to have to find the few that are ready to consider your product. On the complete opposite end of the spectrum, you've got intent, which you may have some lower quality buyers, and those buyers may spend less money with you, but the conversion rate is going to be much higher, and those deals are going to close much faster. The magic is when you get the overlap of fit and intent, right? And that is kind of, Julia, what you're talking about is like the data of who they are and the fit from in a CRM platform like HubSpot, but overlaid with the right social, behavioral, website data to know, oh, not only is this person in my target audience and the perfect fit, they're actually shopping right now, so that you can combine the high selling price with a high close rate and a shorter deal cycle to really propel your business forward. And when you look at these really successful startups, that's what they're really good at. They're really good at spending more and more of their marketing and sales effort in the high fit and high intent quadrant than in any of the other three quadrants, which would be high intent, low fit, low intent, right? Or low fit, low intent, which you just would never want to spend any time there.
Yes, don't spend time there.
Don't spend any time there.
That's not the quadrant you want to be in. But I think also, again, when you think about kind of those type of AI-enabled tools, that's the level of intelligence and action that both, it obviously depends a lot on kind of the design and the onboarding experience, but like it's not intimidating to get started. It's definitely something that works and actually provides that AI magic that everyone is chasing. And that's the level, I think, again, of the software that people are going to start expecting more and more and more.
Can you get specific? Yeah. I know you guys do a lot on Twitter, for example. You can talk Twitter, any platforms. Mm-hmm. I guess we're also supposed to say X. I'm always going to call it Twitter. I joined Twitter in 2007. It's always going to be Twitter to me. I'm old. But could you talk about, like, when we say social data, what specifically do we mean? What are we looking at? What is the type and format of data there that is actually helpful?
Yeah. So I think it breaks down into the type of company that you are. Mm-hmm. If you're an early stage founder and you're looking, let's say, for your first 100 customers, it's really important to understand where those customers are, right? Because you don't have any and you want to have some. And for that, being able to understand, kind of looking at the data of understanding the zeitgeist and the demographic niche that your target buyer is in. Once you identify that, so let's say AI engineers and you're selling dev tools, being able to then, you know, from Notice side, we can go and say, hey, here's a few things. not only is this kind of the place where all of these folks hang out and here's more people like that, you know, so you can then have some sort of outbound strategy, but also this is kind of the key magic here. It's here's the things that they're saying, here's the things that they're thinking, here's the things that they're interacting with. And then you can then base kind of your general narrative around this because you're seeing kind of what's important to them, kind of what they're talking about historically and potentially that week, and use this as outbound hooks. But also dive into the profiles of the folks and have that user intelligence to say, hey, when you go into Notice, essentially you can click onto any user and you will have a specific to you, specific, you know, kind of understands the relevance and it's pre-configured to your business and your kind of the product that you solve and the pain points that you solve for. And it shows you all of the content that they've interacted with, engaged, posted that is relevant to you, as well as any of the kind of the warm connections they might have based on the relationship level data of knowing who in your network or your company's network or your investor's network can make the best intro based on the level of interaction in real time, based on recency, based on a number of different kind of factors of, you know, who has the strongest relationship. And so that gives you an immediate insight into, hey, here's kind of the top like 100 people, also based on kind of their social ranking. And social ranking is important here, especially for early stage companies, because kind of the playbook here is that if you're reaching out, you know, to your point earlier, Kip, that depending like which quadrant you're in, you also want to be not only a kind of the highest fit, highest intent, but when you're starting out, and this is kind of the strategy that Notion and Figma have used of identifying who in that quadrant of best fit, best intent, who's also the person that has the most social capital. And why is that important? It's important because there's, you know, kind of this level of magic and scalability that happens when you're going out to people that are already trusted voices in that audience, that they're vocal voices that people, you know, kind of they post, there's a lot of kind of community and engagement, you know, within their circles. And so for them to be advocates of your product, to be able to be the first adopters of your product and then talk about it, that comes with a lot of trust that early stage companies are obviously very desperate and hungry to acquire. So I would say if you're an early stage company, being able to understand, again, who are the people that are driving voices for that target segment and being able to go and build those relationships, get them to be advocates, get them to be users, that is really, really important. And I would say for later stage companies, for them, they've kind of gone through the ringer. They've tried a bunch of things, they're growing. And so for them, that personalization, because now they're kind of at that scaled outbound, scaled calling, they have their BDRs. And so for them, the personalization element is really, really important. They are getting dinged for sending, you know, just kind of mass outreach. It still happens, but they're not seeing the conversion rate as high as if they've actually done the research. Doing the research for every single salesperson is a lot of time. It's costly. It's inefficient. And so being able to go and say, kind of pull up a page on whatever platform they're using, let's say, obviously, HubSpot, because whatever their CRMs do exist. And for them to be able to say, hey, like, here's all the points that we need to go and target. And even some of the things like, have they engaged with our competitors? What have they said about our competitors? Are they posting about, you know, just general kind of relevant topics of interest to us? Whether it's, again, the pain points that we solve, kind of the narratives that we have on our website, the new kind of launch, have they mentioned and engaged with some of the, you know, content of, let's say, like our latest fundraise or latest launch, any of the kind of the hooks that you can get them to say, yes, this person has researched us. And I think that's kind of key. And I think also for salespeople, they are also really hungry. Like, obviously, they're kind of like they're optimizing for the conversion metrics, for deals closing, the revenue that they're bringing in. But I think also for them, it's just a much easier time to go and sell when they feel prepared for the call as if, again, they've done hours of research, but it's just the information is right there in front of them. So it's kind of like the whole ecosystem, I think, heals in a way where you're not like doing the spam because no one likes doing it or sending it.
Literally, no one likes sending or receiving spam. So just don't do it, please. Like, just please. There are a couple things you just said that I want to kind of double click on and get some more detail on.
Yeah.
One was you're like, hey, all right. So like Figma and Notion, like they use the Notice platform and they're going out and they're mapping a part of their market and they're finding the people with the highest influence in that part of the market. And they're trying to win them over first to kind of have this cascade strategy of like, hey, if I win those most influential people, then a lot of the other folks in that market will follow along, mm-hmm. right? I think if I was a skeptical marketer, a skeptical founder, the type of folks that listen to the show, they'd be like, well, yeah, well, that's cool. That's Figma. That's Notion. Those are big established company. How does my, 10-person startup win over one of those established high influence people? And so I thought maybe it'd be helpful if you and I went back and forth. I've got some ideas. I'm sure you have some ideas of what you would actually do kind of tactically to win over somebody who has a ton of influence that could kind of maybe be the first, pebble in the landslide that is kind of winning that market.
Yeah. So I think a few early that we're seeing again from kind of early stage companies is one, just being in the places. So we'll have a few teams, especially kind of like the folks that are either like launching their first product or they're just in the market. For them, what they've done, and they use Notice every single day for this, is they look at, they kind of map out the segments and the demographics that they're going after, and then seeing where they're posting. And then they're just super, super quick, like almost real time, in posting something meaningful there. It kind of goes back to the content strategy, kind of the counter arm to this, because again, I think social data can be used for enrichment and intelligence, or it can also be used of just guiding where you should be online and be more strategic about your time there. And for this specific case, the founders or sometimes kind of their teams are using Notice to go and say, hey, here's all of the kind of people where they have influence, or they may just be even a rising voice in that space. And then they immediately kind of engage with them on the platforms in real time and post something meaningful.
I think that's a really important point. You're basically saying like being a reply gal or guy is actually very valuable, right? There's kind of a joke about, people who are just always replying. But honestly, most companies often think of social media through publishing through their channels more than they think about being key engagement. And, you and I go back and forth on Twitter and stuff a lot. I think the most helpful interactions we all have are replies more than they are like our actual posts themselves, for example. So I think that's a really, really helpful strategy that literally anybody could go out there and execute.
Yeah, by far. And I think that's one of the kind of the pitfalls that people go into. And I've seen so many companies do this on any platform where they think, the proverbial, if I build it, they will come. Like if I posted, people will see it. No, I forgot. I think it might have been Harry Stebbings that said, you need to spend twice the amount of time on distribution than in the content itself. And I think kind of to this equation, the content has to be good. The content has to be smart and authentic and engaging. Because I think, again, in the age of AI, we've seen a lot of the just general, bot-like replies from real people because they're using tech that's not mirrored to their voice. It's not personalized. They don't understand the context. So again, kind of going back to all the other things that we just talked about. So it has to be good. And I think also thinking about, well, if I post this, are people seeing this? And I think when you're an early stage startup or even sometimes later stage companies, that they have terrible engagement and they're just posting content. It's so corporate sounding and it's so not again, not to ding Deloitte, but it's a consultant wrote this.
You're like somebody who is super jargony, knows nothing about my business, wrote this stuff.
Yeah, you have to be funny. And I think, frankly, if I was writing content for companies and I was kind of like a one person show, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but post, can I say?
Oh yeah, you could definitely. I think posting is a great strategy. Yeah. But hold on, in all seriousness, give people the, what do you mean when you say posting? I know what you mean, but I'm an internet dork and maybe everybody listening to this isn't as much of a dork as I am. So kind of explain what you mean.
Posting. It's basically just kind of being really funny and posting memes, engaging. And I think what was something I've seen as really helpful is taking the latest Twitter gag and kind of the joke that's been going around and then repurposing for your own, not necessarily your own company, but making more let's say industry specific. Because I think again, a lot of the companies see the content through the lens of, hey, I need to talk about only the things that we do, but you really should just be an observer in this. And I think that aura of hey, we get it. We don't have to be constantly, I think building public is very important and you should be talking about what you're doing. But I think it should also be overlapped with just a more of a laissez-faire approach to this, where it's super relevant. And I think one of the kind of a few examples that we've seen of companies doing this is obviously, kind of the McDonald's, the Wendy's, but for more of the, I think Discord does a great Partyful, Oprah GX. I mean, they have a huge posting account that has nothing to do with the product itself, but all about, typing to the zeitgeist of almost being a Reddit subreddit on Twitter, because we know that that's exactly who their customers are.
We'll be right back. But before, let me tell you about another podcast I love, Nudge, hosted by Phil Agnew, is brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. Ever notice how the smallest changes can have the biggest impact? On Nudge, you learn simple evidence-backed tips to help you kick bad habits, get a raise, grow a business. Every bite-sized 20-minute show comes packed with practical advice. Nudge is fast-paced, but is still insightful with real-world examples that you can apply. Oh, and it's the UK's fastest-growing business podcast. If you want an MBA's worth of insight in one podcast, this is the right show for you. Entrepreneurs will love the show because it's filled with repeatable, proven studies, not hearsay and one-off success stories. You're going to love the show because I was interviewed by Phil. You can go check out my episode. And I recently listened to an awesome episode. It's called Six Scientifically Proven Persuasion Techniques. It's a must listen for anyone in marketing. Listen to Nudge wherever you get your podcasts. I think those are awesome examples. If you want the like masterclass, friend of the pod, former hustler and HubSpotter, Trung Thon I think probably the king of all, like he's probably the overlord of the posters, yeah. But like follow Trung. He's amazing at it, obviously. And it's just the subtlety of taking what's happening in pop culture and putting a twist on it that's relevant to what you're saying, which is kind of what you're talking about. I think a lot of people often conflate it for just being outlandish or outrageous, and that's actually not it. Like what you're actually saying is there's a consciousness around a topic and you're tapping into that topic by kind of tweaking it in a really clever way. And there's a bunch of the accounts that Yulia mentioned. Go check out Trung to kind of get a better understanding of what that actually looked like. But what we're really saying is if you engage on the reply side of social and you create your own social content that isn't boring and about your product and is actually about the culture, the zeitgeist of what's happening on Twitter, YouTube, whatever the platform you are on, that's how you're actually going to break out. Because one of the things I would share, Yulia, is like in this AI revolution, it feels like nobody's talking about social anymore. I got the update from my social team. Like all of our social numbers are killing it. Like they're looking exceptionally good. It is like clear to me that social is more vibrant of a community, regardless of what network you're talking about, than it's ever been. And there's actually more opportunity than ever. And especially if you take advantage of it, while some people might be distracted on AI or VR or whatever that might be, there, it seems like there's just an amazing opportunity out there. And you all at Notice, like you run leaderboards, you have all this data, like you know what works on these platforms. Mm-hmm. And I thought it might be helpful for you to break down, like in the current state of social, like what's really working? You gave us a few things, but what else?
Yeah, so I think looking at the leaderboards, which is essentially our rankings of, you know, social capital, so how viral and how popular you are, as well as your engagement as well. It's been kind of interesting because when we launched leaderboards now a year and a half ago, we really thought it's going to be like only for VCs and founders, and like very tech circle. And then we started to see how it grew. And I knew that it was going to be viral when like Cat Twitter started pulling up. And I was like, oh gosh, like we are now like way, like this is like a really wide net. And then of course it was like the fandoms and the BTS and Taylor Swift. And then Turkey had elections and we saw that some of the candidates were using leaderboard rankings as part of their slogans.
That's wild.
Which was a wild thing. So having now mapped out, I would say, a really good chunk of X specifically within the leaderboards, I can say that the, once again, posting work, a lot of it are shit post accounts. Let's say from kind of looking at the top 20, a lot of pop culture.
Yeah.
A lot of, you know, again, the fandoms, obviously Elon Musk is on there. And I think kind of the biggest takeaways and having seen the leaderboards evolve, I think seeing creators that are really focused on one specific niche.
Oh, that's a good one.
So that's kind of, you're not just cross-pollinating across a number of different interests. You're really zeroed in on that one thing and you post consistently. And I think that level of engagement where, again, you kind of build that trust by knowing that, hey, tomorrow we're going to have some more content dropping and the day after that, and it's going to be the same thing that we come to expect. That consistency builds almost this like this fandom around your own account. And I think that's been the thing that works. So I think it's been kind of interesting because I think now, you know, with monetization and X and just kind of a lot of different platforms, now everyone has a microphone, right? Anyone can go and create content. And so if I were to give one advice to content creators, it's to really focus on that one thing. And you're not always going to get it right. So it's okay to experiment because, let's be honest, you know, there's not going to be an audience baked in as soon as you start doing it. So it's kind of, it's a fun time to go and experiment and create and kind of figure out like what your own voice is and bring that to the audience.
You know, I love that. And it kind of makes me want to go down that one particular rabbit hole, which is like, you know, you started your career, we talked about it earlier in the show, at Bridgewater, like this is in the investing world. And one of the things that I think the average person, especially the average marketer, doesn't understand is just like compounding math, right? Like compounding math. There was the whole meme about the Roman Empire and about how men think about the Roman Empire. My Roman Empire is compounding math. Like literally like multiple times a day in my life, I'm like, oh gosh, I still don't really understand compounding math. And I just like am in awe of it. And even when Kieran and I, we started the podcast, we're like, oh, it's going to take us 5 years for this all to compound, mm-hmm. right? And to be this big thing. And we're not going to do day one if we're not going to go and do the end of 5 years, right? Like that's just where we're at on this kind of level of commitment. And that's the point you're trying to make is that I will tell you that every successful marketing team or marketer I have ever met leverages compound. They're just not these, oh, I'm going to do this stunty thing one time this month and then another stunty thing 2 months from now. They are just like super consistent at whatever they do. And they know that the discipline of consistency will just compound over weeks, months, and years to really build the brand and drive the both like awareness and demand in the market they need. And it seems like what you're telling us is like, look, I've looked at all the data.
Yes.
If you just disciplined and do it and like lean into the compounding math, it's going to work.
100%. But I think also here's the thing. I do understand the marketers that they're being pulled in so many different directions. And I have a ton of empathy for them because they have different priorities at all times. And I think kind of the key here of being able to go and do focus on compounding math, focus on consistency, is understanding the audience, like understanding your target audience. Yes. And I think being able to be really as precise as possible, which also incidentally goes back to what we're talking about, you know, that deep user intelligence of what are they thinking about? How are they speaking? You know, kind of what is their tone of voice? What are the things that are kind of going in the zeitgeist of that, you know, if you have one target demographic or many, being able to really narrow in on this because it, again, it comes from the level of personalization of how you are able to figure out their tone of voice, their interests, exactly what they're thinking, essentially become them to then say, hey, I got this. I know what they want. And then being able to be consistently deliver on that. So I think this is when you're starting out, you're doing a ton of different experiments. And that's probably, you know, for the best, because that's in the process of figuring out who exactly, you know, this product is for, who exactly is using this. And once you have really firm footing, then I think it's just consistency, consistency, consistency.
Yeah. You actually set that up in your original part of this conversation, which you used the word focus many, many times. And I think that was exceptionally intentional on your part where you're just like, look, you have to have a focus, not just in like your discipline in doing this thing, but like, what is your niche? What is your strategy? I've always thought of it as like density of thought. Mm-hmm. Like when I look at like a great piece of marketing creative, it's just like incredibly dense, right? You're like, oh, the colors work perfectly. The typefaces work perfectly. Like there's hidden meanings in what's even there. It's like somebody has thought about this thing so deeply that there could not be anything more packed into it. But at the same time, it's so simple that you get it immediately, right? And that might be a great logo or a great billboard or something like that, but it also extrapolates to a great social post, right? Like the same principles kind of hold true regardless.
Exactly. And I think also you're able to pick up on all this because I think you're just a very astute person and a marketer and you've been in the space. And so you're like, oh, that's great. Like I'm seeing the kind of the triple meaning. So I think it's also kind of kudos to you on that, Kip. But I also think, you know, being able to be really free and experimenting early on is really, really key. And I hate like sounding like an after school special, but I think
that does sound super after school special.
Like be yourself, do the things you want to do. But I think really without taking a risk, no matter what stage you are, and I think, again, this is where HubSpot does a really great job, and especially you specifically, Kip, is you guys don't operate like this giant company from a marketing perspective. You're going out and you're taking risks, you know, kind of the NASCAR kind of collaboration that you've done around like, hey, like sponsoring of like a few of the kind of the creators on Twitter to go out and have this and kind of wear the HubSpot merch. Like, I think those are the things that are really important in terms of getting outside of that box of like, hey, we're a large stage company. Or, and I think when you're an early stage company, being able to say, hey, we may not know what works just yet. We're going to throw some things on the wall and then see what sticks. And then once you have that, obviously doubling down on the winners is really, really important.
Yeah, I mean, look, you have to experiment to figure out what works for your business regardless. Here's my cheat sheet on this, because experimenting can sound very platitudinal, right? It's like, cool, yeah, everybody's like out there. It's like, cool, yeah, I experiment all the time, jerk. Like, tell me what to do. And I don't know all of your marketing scenarios, but this is what I can tell you. If you are working on something, or you're writing something, or you're shipping a social media message, if you are like so excited to hit publish, it's going to work. And the opposite is also true. If you're like mailing it in and you can see the team's like, oh, I'm punching through my process. Next up is this post and I'm going to get that done today. And then we're going to move on to the next thing. Then it's not going to work. It's going to be bad. It's actually not any more complex than that. The best work I've ever done, anybody who I've worked with has ever done, it's like, we're just going back and forth. There's high energy to it. You're just like, oh gosh, yeah, let's do this. Let's do this. And oh, I can't wait for everybody to see it. I wonder what people are going to say. And if like that's the vibe of what's happening, it's always going to work. Never have I ever found a time when that energy does not translate to the end buyer and prospect and customer experience.
I love that. I really love that. Have we found we need to coin this into like the version of the product market fit where people are like trying to summarize this into like a thing. And I think this is almost like a marketing reality hit. I'm not sure. I think we need to like think on this, but I think you have something that we can really patent.
Basically, what I'm trying to say is like the internal energy is a proxy for like the external virality, right? For how much people are going to care about it, read it, share it, watch it, what have you. And if you've got no energy internally as you're working on it, it's going to have no energy out in the world. Mm-hmm. And it's just like there's just this direct correlation that I fortunately have been doing this long enough. I've mapped it all out to see that like, man, there's always a deep connection here. Like we're working on some big announcements in the spring and like the energy in the team is like going back and forth. It's incredible. I'm like, these are going to nail it, right? Like I have 100% confidence that like this is going to go exceptionally well. Versus there have been a lot of times where it's like, yeah, nobody's excited about this. Like we're clearly mailing it in. We're doing it because we think somebody else wants us to do it. And like, that is not a good place to be in. And I say that and like everybody listening, probably nodding along because most teams are doing something on a daily basis where they're like, I really don't want to do this, right? And look, it's not fun. Sometimes you have to do stuff you don't want to do. But especially for your big bets, the things that you're really counting on working, you need that high level of energy and excitement internally so that it translates over to the external audience.
Exactly. Because I think it also comes back to the opportunity cost, right? If you're a early stage team or a growing team, there's a lot of, you can't experiment too much. And every experiment comes at a cost and a price. And I think this is where I really genuinely love this. I've never heard anyone say this, but I think it does make sense where it's like, hey, like, are you guys really psyched to go and publish this? Even with our leaderboards, there's a moment where we were always, you know, kind of a small team by design and we hit publish. And then we actually kind of, here's kind of the playbook going back to some of the things that we've said, where we've chosen, you know, because we thought that it was so like VC and tech focused, some of the categories like investors and founders and startups, they were very intentionally that. And we've chosen kind of the people that have like the biggest creators in that space that we had good relationships with. Again, using Notice, we're able to track this and say, hey, you're kind of the leader of this category. So you can have like vetting approval of who goes on the leaderboards first. And so really curate that experience. Because I think, again, like not starting from like an empty box problem. And we went out with it and they kind of published. And there was like a few minutes where like no one was engaging with this. And I was like, did we make the wrong bet? Like we were so
like, you're like, we failed.
And I'm like, and all right, like, so sorry, team. Like we spent so much time kind of building this out. I mean, it was only a few days, but still, you know, it's when you measure kind of success and results by like margins of an inch, that it matters. And so I was like, oh God. And then we started to go and I was like, whew, like we took a bet. We were super excited. Like the team, like we like woke up super early and there was a lot of energy and it paid off. So it's definitely those, like, you know, when you're working on something good.
Yeah. And for folks who may not be super familiar, what Yulia and the team at Nonos did that I think is pretty remarkable as a tool to market their business is they created different leaderboards for, you know, basically highest engagement, most popular users in a given category, whether it be investors or startup founders or marketers, what have you. And you played on that notion of human competition and people wanting to be the best and people comparing themselves to other people, which, by the way, always works. Like, just pro tip to everybody out there. If you have a way to do that in your business, it literally always works. I've seen it time and time again. But like, it's also a great example of a strategy where you all were all in. Like, you had to develop, you integrated this into the product. You had to develop these leaderboards in real time. You had to develop a lot of them. It wasn't just like, oh, I'm just gonna throw this one together and get it out there. You took real risk in spending a lot of time and money to do something that you had no idea was going to work or not. And that's what marketing is. And that's especially what marketing on social is taking those risks and failing on some and hitting really big on others.
Exactly. And you don't know unless you take that shot. So I think kind of the messaging here is that you got to take the shot and you have to take shots consistently, shots on goal. Otherwise, it's just you're going to be kind of doing the same thing over and over, wondering why nothing is working.
Shots on goal. Are you soccer or hockey? What goal are we talking about here? What's Yulia's sport of choice?
Tennis. So there are no goals, but the goal is to win. So
you do strike me as somebody who would play tennis. I don't know why.
Yeah, it's great. And I've not been converted to pickleball, although God knows people have tried. So I'm just astonished.
You're a purist. She's a purist, everybody. In the YouTube comments, if you're team pickleball or team tennis, leave us a comment. We'll see who wins. Tennis is really hard, Yulia. That's the problem, which is why all the tennis players just want to play tennis. And all the non-tennis players are like, oh, we'll just play pickleball because we're not good enough to play tennis.
I feel like I know I've seen some real hostility. So please don't make me distress.
It's like, be kind.
Perfect for engagement.
Be kind.
Yes. Tell Yulia why she's wrong.
No, you are not wrong. You just have an awesome skill and you're doing it. Okay, so let's recap. We're running out of time. Let's recap for everybody kind of our core points of today's show. One, social in a post-AI world is more important than ever, right? Like, both from a data perspective of how it's going to feed models, both from a data perspective of how sales reps, how marketers can use social data to increase conversion rate and connection rates in a really, really busy world. And we talked about what that looks like. We went through the fit and intent model there. It was super helpful. The actual social as a marketing channel is doing great. Mm-hmm. Social is bigger and more engaged now than ever. And we talked about kind of what the most successful tactics are. We talked about reply engagement as a really underrated tactic. We talked about shitposting. We talked about the power of compounding math. We talked about a lot of the aspects that are going to lead you to be successful on social day. What else do you want to make sure we leave the audience with as we sign off today's show?
I think, again, take those shots on goal, connect with your audience. I think, again, maybe it's just platitudes, but I think it really, really works. Know your audience, connect with them. They're humans. You're human. People want human interaction. And you guys got this.
Awesome. All right. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode of Marketing Against the Grain. We'll be back with you all real soon.
Thank you.